Djokovic down the tee. Forehand from Tsitsipas is deep. Working now to the backhand of Tsitsipas. Backhand to backhand, both players. And now Djokovic will wheel into one up the line. He's just made it. Block back from Tsitsipas. It goes long! And it is 10 at the absolute best for Novak Djokovic. He owns this court. And he is back in style.
Hello and welcome to the AO Show for day 14 of the Australian Open. John Huvenar is with you on the grounds of Melbourne Park for a final chapter to this incredible tournament. Here's what's coming up on the show. Dominant Djokovic does it again. Novak notches title 10 in Melbourne.
This probably is the, I would say, biggest victory in my life, considering the circumstances.
Coronation celebrations for Queen Arena continue.
I still feel like I'm on another planet, trying to understand what just happened.
Back to back, checkmates claim the women's doubles again.
We are trying to be the best ones, and we are quite successful, so I'm really happy with that.
And rock on. Flight facilities take the stage at the AO Finals Festival.
I had most wins in the under-16s.
Okay.
That's all ahead on the AO Show. Novak Djokovic is the Australian Open champion for the 10th time, his fourth in a row, in a night to forget for Stefanos Tsitsipas. The Greek found himself on the back foot early, having to fend off two break points in his opening service game. Two games later, he was unable to repeat the effort, double faulting to gift wrap the first break of serve to Djokovic.
Second serve. Djokovic up near the baseline for this one. And this serve, it's a double fault. He's given the break to Djokovic. Early advantage for the four seed. It's 3-1 opening set.
The crowd support was strong for Tsitsipas, but his opponent had the scalpel out and was wielding it with surgical precision. Djokovic cruising to the first set in just 36 minutes.
Set point Djokovic. The serve out wide. Big stretch cross court four, and he goes long from Tsitsipas. The opening set goes away of Novak Djokovic, the nine-time champion.
Tsitsipas built his confidence in the second set, holding serve to love and forcing errors to take Djokovic to love 30. He started to push his opponent to the corners of the court.
Back up from Tsitsipas cross court. Djokovic with a two-hander into the net, and Djokovic has fallen. I think he's okay. I think he just stumbled. Yeah, he's up on his feet and he's fine. I think he just stumbled as he went over.
He's walking fine already, walking around the court.
The third seed found the line to pull out a massive hold from the Djokovic stone.
Forehand from Tsitsipas, forehand from Djokovic. Tsitsipas will hit backhand cross court. Djokovic is there with his two-hander. Sliced by Tsitsipas with a lot of air. Forehand Djokovic goes back to the backhand. Tsitsipas, defensive backhand, a lot of air. Forehand from Djokovic. Tsitsipas reads this. Low volley from Djokovic is going wide. And Tsitsipas holds and he punches the air. And he looks up to the Greek fans and says, come on, we're in this together.
Tsitsipas's first break point opportunity was timely, coming at 5-4 for set point. But Djokovic showed his pedigree, firing a down-the-line forehand winner to save it.
Tsitsipas with set point. Second serve from Djokovic. Backhand from Tsitsipas. Up the middle. Forehand Djokovic. Backhand from Tsitsipas. Lofted deep to the forehand of Djokovic. Forehand Tsitsipas up the middle. Forehand Djokovic into out. Backhand Tsitsipas up the line. Forehand Djokovic to the forehand of Tsitsipas. Both playing a little conservatively. Backhand Tsitsipas. Forehand Djokovic. Backhand Tsitsipas is lofted. Forehand Djokovic down the forehand wing is a winner.
The second set rolled into a chaotic tiebreaker with 6 points won against the serve. The Greek was on his knees down 4-1, but managed to grind his way back to 4-all on the back of errors and a rare double fault from the Serb. But errors from his own racket proved toxic for Tsitsipas with the set on the line.
Djokovic, 6-4, second set tiebreak. Serving down the forehand wing. It's into the net from Tsitsipas. The fourth forehand error from Tsitsipas.
Djokovic left the court for a bathroom break for nearly 8 minutes between sets. The hiatus seemed to benefit Tsitsipas, who was the beneficiary of another Djokovic double fault, to notch two breakpoint chances, the second of which he converted.
Tsitsipas level with the Melbourne side for this first serve, which he takes as a slice backhand. Short ball back that way from Djokovic. He's missed it. Early break of serve, but to Stefanos Tsitsipas. And he does get the better of that opening game.
But the man with the longest winning streak in Australian Open history was lurking just around the corner. He broke right back with a fiery backhand winner and a forced error.
Break point.
The serve here from Tsitsipas. Backhand full stretch from Djokovic. Into the juice court goes Tsitsipas. Great angle from Djokovic's forehand. Short ball from Tsitsipas. He's pushed it wide.
Break back immediately for Djokovic.
With the championship on the line, Tsitsipas lifted his intensity in the third set, hitting harder, flatter balls and throwing in some incredible drop shots. The Greek kept his level to force a third set tiebreak, but in the blink of an eye, he trailed 5-love. Some unforced errors by Djokovic allowed Tsitsipas back in the door momentarily, and a 26-shot rally had the crowd on their feet.
The serve out wide, blocked, sliced backhand from Tsitsipas, lands in the corner of the ad court. He now plays a forehand up the line of the juice court. Cross court forehand from Djokovic, dug out by Tsitsipas. Cross court backhand now from Djokovic, matched by Tsitsipas. Up the line from Djokovic, cross forehand is deep from Tsitsipas, matched by Djokovic. Forehand to forehand, he's hit the sideline as Tsitsipas. He's back that way. Djokovic just leans him one up the line. Cross court backhand from Tsitsipas, backhand to backhand. Slice again from Tsitsipas. Top spin backhand from Djokovic. Up the line goes Tsitsipas. Full stretch on the cross forehand is Djokovic. Forehand to forehand they go. Crucial rally. The shorter ball from Tsitsipas. Djokovic coming in cross court. Now he's going to play the low backhand volley, but he puts it into the net. Well done again. He's hanging on by his fingernails.
But it would be all but the final gasp from Tsitsipas, who, despite fending off 2 of 3 championship points, couldn't hold back the dam wall.
To extend the history that he's created at Melbourne Park. Championship point. Djokovic down the tee. Forehand from Tsitsipas is deep. Working now to the backhand of Tsitsipas. Backhand to backhand, both players. And now Djokovic will wheel into one up the line. He's just made it. Block back from Tsitsipas. It goes long! And it is 10 of the absolute best for Novak Djokovic. He owns this court. And he is back in style.
With the title secure, Djokovic climbed into his player box and collapsed in heaving sobs.
I have to say that this has been one of the most challenging tournaments I've ever played in my life, considering the circumstances, not playing last year, coming back this year. And I want to thank all the people that made me feel welcome, made me feel comfortable. To be in Melbourne, to be in Australia. Only the team and the family knows what we've been through in the last 4 or 5 weeks. And this probably is the, I would say, biggest victory in my life, considering the circumstances.
For Tsitsipas, 42 errors to 20 ultimately proved his undoing.
There's nothing that I didn't use to my advantage, or there's nothing that I could have extracted more. For today, I did everything possible. You know, Novak is a player that pushes you to your limits, and I don't see this as a curse. I don't see this as like something annoying. This is very good for the sport. To have competitors like him, to have champions like him, is very important for us that want to get to his point one day. And getting our, you know, asses kicked is for sure a very good lesson every single time. He has made me a much better player. He has made my levels of concentration get higher and higher every single time I get to play him.
Similar to Djokovic's 2021 title, an injury that jeopardized his campaign was ultimately not enough to stop the juggernaut. His coach, Goran Ivanišević, praising Djokovic's resilience.
I don't say 100%, but 97% of the players, if on Saturday when you get results of the MRI, you go straight to the referee office and pull out of the tournament. But not him. He is from other space.
Not only does the 22-time Grand Slam champion draw level with Rafael Nadal on major titles, the pair are now the only two men to reach double digits at a single Grand Slam event.
Of course, I am motivated to win as many slams as possible. You know, at this stage of my career, these trophies are the biggest motivational factor of why I still compete. So that's the case, without a doubt. Let's see how far it takes me. I really don't want to stop here. I don't have intention to stop here. I feel great about my tennis. I know that when I'm feeling good, physically, mentally present, that I have a chance to win any slam against anybody.
A 10th Australian Open title for Djokovic, 22 Grand Slams overall, and to dissect everything, the match itself and the history-making moments are Peter Mercado, commentator, and gig analyst Simon Ray. Gentlemen, what did you make of that match?
Novak Djokovic, outstanding. An outstanding tournament, an outstanding final. We knew that he was going to be a force to be reckoned with, and he absolutely showed that. Whatever Stefanos Tsitsipas tried during that final, he tried absolutely everything he could. He could not get through Novak Djokovic. The thing that astonishes me, he won his first of the 10 back in 2008. He is still the favourite for the title in 2023. He still rolled through the event, only dropping one set. I bet you Enzo Cuoco is feeling pretty good about himself just quietly. And it's re-established himself at the top of the men's game as the number one player in the world. He continues to push the boundaries of where tennis can go. And he just showed that again right from the start of this tournament to the end. It was personal for him this year, and that's why we saw the outpouring of emotion at the end. And he showed that he's a man on a mission and just unstoppable.
It's mind-boggling stuff, isn't it? The numbers that you throw around, John, and we all do, and they're just numbers. But to actually give some thought to behind the scenes, what's going on to accumulate those numbers over a journey, you know, whether it's Rafa at Roland Garros or Novak here in Melbourne, and 22 apiece. It's extraordinary. Like, just to think back and kind of think how difficult one of these things is to win. 7 best of 5 set matches against dog hungry opponents every second day. And to do that 20, it's just, it's beyond belief. I don't have any words.
It's the privilege of being able to watch the very best at the top of their game. And we are ultimately privileged. I've been doing Australian Open Radio for 17 years. So living through and calling this era of tennis. And it's just extraordinary. And it just continues on and on. We think, oh, when are the next challenges going to come up? That it's going to get closer and closer now that we're without Roger Federer and the question marks over Nadal. But, joy, Djokovic just established himself. He's got to be favourite again next year too. But the other good thing was it showed that Melbourne was back. Djokovic was back. Melbourne was back. The Australian Open was back. And it was wonderful to see.
All right, Simon, let's dig a little deeper into the numbers from tonight's 3-set win.
Well, we spoke about it last night and we felt that Tsitsipas had to start well if he was going to be competitive in this thing. It always felt like it was going to be a long road back if he trails early. And we spoke about Novak's early breaks converted number. So if he breaks serve in the first 4 games, goes on to win that set 96% of the time. So trouble with a capital T. And sure enough, what happened early, Novak breaks early and goes on to seal the deal. So, and it starts with serve and return for me. And I think it's an area that we probably undersell Novak in is the serve. So let's just dive into the serve in set one. So Novak serves at 72% in set one. In terms of those points, that where he's made the first serve 72% of the time, goes on to win 94% of those points in set one. So it's borderline untouchable. Not going to get broken in a set of tennis serving with those types of numbers. Stefanos, by contrast, in set one, serves at 66% and wins 70 on first serve, 57 on second. So it's the pressure that Novak's able to build on his own service game, and then we'll get to the return in a second, but he sets the tone for the match. Breaks early, outstanding serving performance. Then we saw a little bit of volatility in set two, but really the tone was set early, Peter.
Absolutely, and I think the thing too, the serving of Djokovic, the plan is very clear against Stefanos Tsitsipas, stay away from the forehand. So pretty much every single serve was directed out to that backhand wing, and he was under so much pressure with that one-hander just to maintain a presence there. And every time Tsitsipas, you thought was going to get a strangle, he's winning points. He's having to play 9, 10, 11 shot rallies just to win a point and just to keep himself in the contest. Very few service games he could cycle through very quickly. Whereas Djokovic, yes, he had his struggles at times. He was broken in that second set, but there were a lot of service games that he was holding to love or that he was holding to 15. And that just keeps that pressure, constant pressure on Tsitsipas. He knows how to play these finals, not just here, but around the world so, so well. And it's a skill in itself.
That's an outstanding point. So we talk about pressure points on serve. So 30 all, juice, obviously a break point or any point that can lead to a break point. I don't think our listeners would be surprised when I tell them Novak Djokovic in the first set didn't face a single pressure point on his serve. And Stefanos Tsitsipas is trying to fight off 8, 10, 12 pressure points on his service game. So that's the difference in the first set.
And then you roll into the second set and he was able to keep that pressure on. But Tsitsipas, he was able to rise to that level. But it's also that thing of the wearing effect that it has. So even if Tsitsipas was able to win that second set, and he did fall away late, both in the second and the third set tie breaks, but even if he was able to win that, the physical exertion required to actually take a set off Djokovic in a tiebreaker, and yet Djokovic would sit there and go, well, I can keep going for another 3 sets. What have you got, Stefanos, with the hard work that he has to do? It just has that wearing effect. So even if he managed to scrape a set, he was still going to be in trouble the way Djokovic was playing.
Yeah, and the second set for me is where it got really interesting. So we know Tsitsipas is already behind the eight ball. We knew he needed to start really strongly. Didn't get that done. So in the second set, he does start to find some of his better tennis, though. He does come out with a renewed sense of purpose and intent. And Novak, we know that volatility's there in Novak. That's the human side of Novak. We don't see it in many other categories. It's superhuman. It's stuff that we've never seen before. But sometimes, in terms of giving Goran a spray and directing a bit of traffic at the player's box, sometimes you do see the human element come out. So the second set, it got interesting. We knew going in, the Tsitsipas forehand had to have a night out. I felt like he had to dominate with that shot. So just the serve wasn't going to be enough. Had to have a great serving night, goes without saying. Had to back it up with the forehand on the forehand side. And when it mattered most in that second set tiebreak, keep in mind the second set total points won differential is only 1 point in this, 41 to Djokovic, 40 to Tsitsipas. And it was the Tsitsipas forehand that went missing when it mattered the most in that second set.
Absolutely. When you've got that traffic being directed ad court the whole time, and he's trying to run around and play those off forehands, it did fall away. Because the other thing that Djokovic managed to do is force Tsitsipas away from the baseline, away from that attacking position. The further away he got from the baseline, the harder it was for him to keep the ball in play. And the other thing that Djokovic did employ was a low slice, sometimes dropping in short, sometimes long. We underestimate, and I wonder, you would probably have the stats, and I reckon Hawkeye would be in on this too, the shape of the Djokovic ball in a rally. No two balls are the same. He's throwing in moon balls, he's slicing, he's hitting flat, he's got deep topspin, he's working the corners of the court. It's just really fascinating to watch how he constructs a point with all those different shots. The variety is just off the scale.
Yeah, it was. And I think the other thing that, from a Stefanos Tsitsipas perspective, really was found wanting, and only in a handful of moments, but again, we know the margins are so fine, so slim at this level, was the Tsitsipas net game and the execution of that net game. And there were a couple of really costly misses after he'd constructed really quality points where he didn't finish. And again, it's another difference maker. It's a really small difference maker, but it's another difference maker in this environment.
It shows the margins that they play with at this level. And you go into the third set and it was pretty much more of the same. And you felt that, okay, Djokovic, he's serving and he's cycling through that game where you thought that Tsitsipas might make a run. He got to 30 and everyone goes, ooh, here's an opportunity. He serves his way out of trouble again, has another love service game after that. The pressure back on Tsitsipas. We went to the tiebreak and exactly the same thing. Djokovic maintained or increased his level. Tsitsipas has dropped.
Yeah, and so now Novak, two sets to love up, and in pursuit of number 22, now he starts to get rolling. So we've spoken about the serve, spoke about a little bit of the shakiness of the Tsitsipas forehand and net game in set two. How about some of these numbers on return now and the contrast that these numbers provide? So in terms of first serve return points won, in set three, just set three alone, Novak's winning 38% against the Tsitsipas first serve. That's a big number against a huge first server. Yeah. And from a second serve perspective, also 38% of second serve points won. Not such a huge number, but a significant number. Now let's contrast that. Tsitsipas, 26% of his return points won against the Djokovic first serve. But wait for this one. Against the Djokovic second serve in set three, Tsitsipas goes at 8%.
Yeah.
That's the number. That's the match.
And that's the pressure that you have to put on. He feels like he has to go for so much more on that second serve to really assert some sort of authority. And you're going to miss more than you make, I think, when you're under that sort of pressure.
Yeah, absolutely. And the last thing I'll say, and kind of summing all of that up. So serve and return, what does it lead to? I don't think you necessarily see that come out in the wash in the short rally points won, what we call points decided within four shots. But you can still trace back medium rally points won, so that's points decided with a count of between 5 and 8 shots. You can still trace that back to what's going on in the serve department and what's going on in the return department. So in terms of medium points won across the night, 21-8 in Novak Djokovic's favour. That's a trouncing. It's pretty even at short rally points won. It's 9 all at long rally points won. So once it gets out beyond that, serve and return factor kind of comes down once you get to 9 shots plus. But medium points won, medium length points won, 21-8. It's a trouncing.
Yeah, absolutely is. And we saw at the end of the match too, John, that the emotion from Djokovic. He'd been pretty calm throughout. Simon mentioned, you know, he likes to talk at his player box. And there was a little bit about, but not as much as what we've seen in the lead up to this. It was once he won the title and he was cool, calm and collected, he did his usual stuff on the court. When he went to his team, I've never seen that level of emotion from Djokovic at all. after winning a major final like this. It just all came pouring out. We heard it in the speeches as well. And obviously he said, you know, this is the best win that he's had in his career at a major. And you could see all of it pouring out. It was personal this year. And he's proven that he was a man on a mission and got the job done.
And I think the scary thing is, from my perspective anyway, there's no end in sight. So this looks like a guy that's in full flight right now.
Yeah.
And I know we talk about the age, but why not 25, 26, 27, 28? I don't see an end in sight. Peter may disagree. It's frightening stuff.
He goes in as favourite at Roland Garros too, which is saying something, because Nadal will be there as well. And, you know, Wimbledon, and then you go to US Open again. I mean, Alcaraz could potentially be a threat there when he's back out on the tour, and some of the younger guys. But you got to be able to do it best two out of three. They can do it best two out of three. It's three out of five. Yep. That is the dynamic that they haven't cracked that code yet, and that the Djokovic riddle continues to remain unsolved.
He has stated emphatically once again that he is the greatest player currently in the world and has a bright future, which sounds ridiculous, ahead of him. Gentlemen, thank you so much for your time on the roundtable tonight and right throughout the tournament. You've brought some wonderful insights to the AO show, and we thank you for your time.
Love your work, John.
Thanks, Peter. Cheers.
Aryna Sabalenka is still getting used to her new moniker, Grand Slam champion, a day after her victory over Elena Rybakina. This morning, the 24-year-old took a cruise in a wooden punt around Ornamental Lake in Melbourne's Royal Botanic Gardens, showing off the Daphne Akhurst Memorial Trophy from the night before. But it seems the championship is still taking a while to sink in.
I think I need a few more days to realize. I mean, I still feel like I'm on another planet, trying to understand what just happened.
And how about all this morning? You seem to be a natural in front of the cameras. Are you enjoying it?
You know, I like to pose, especially when you're Grand Slam champion. And yeah, I think it's the best morning of my life. It's so beautiful.
What about celebrations last night? What happened after the match?
it was funny night. Everyone was just too happy. Some of us didn't make it today because it was too much last night. But yeah, we celebrate with my team and a little bit, as I said, a little bit of pizza, a little bit of sweets, a little bit of champagne. It was a little bit of everything last night.
And what's the rest of the day hold for you now? Like, how do you take this feeling away?
Another good restaurant, of course, and then I need to pack my bags, so not so much time to enjoy.
What's next on your schedule now? Because the next tournament you go into, you know, it's going to be crazy as a Grand Slam champion.
Yeah, it's going to be different. That's why I think I'm going to play only Dubai, because I need some time to rest, to relax, to just calm down from everything that happened and start over again.
Shibahara serves. Backhand from Siniakova is really good, but from Shibahara into the net on the backhand, and the screams are from the Czechs. Barbora Krejcikova and Katerina Siniakova have won a second Australian Open title and confirmed their status as the preeminent pairing in women's doubles.
Barbora Krejcikova and Katerina Siniakova have gone back-to-back in the women's doubles final, winning their second consecutive title in Melbourne. The all-Czech team defeated the 10th seed pairing of Shuko Aoyama and Ena Shibahara 6-4, 6-3. The number one seeds haven't lost a doubles match together since 2021, winning every major they contested in 2022. Krejcikova and Siniakova have also now won their last 21 of 23 matches at Melbourne Park, after being runners-up and semi-finalists in 2021 and 2020, respectively.
I have to say, there's a lot of like hard work behind it. Yeah, so many practices, you know, so many. So I remember many matches, you know, that we got really close. A couple of times we're here to the semifinals or other slams, and we just didn't, you know, we just weren't able to get through. And I think with the experience and with everything that, as the teams are changing, some teams are, you know, not playing anymore or they're retiring. So just the generation is changing as well. And I mean, I'm really happy that, you know, as part of this tennis generation, we are trying to be the best ones, and we are quite successful. So I'm really happy with that, and I'm honored.
As everyone knows, the second weekend of the AO always means we're down to the best performers of the tournament. And it's not just true for the players, but the ball kids as well. Beginning with 394 boys and girls a fortnight ago, just the top 22 were selected for the women's and men's singles finals. So what does it take to be a top ball kid at the AO? Josh Martin went down to the ball kid hut to find out.
To be a ball kid is quite a physical challenge.
You need to be fast on your feet, have good energy all the time.
Rolling, servicing, and a lot of running.
You are also athletes, so we really need to keep you healthy too.
Making sure that, you know, they're always at the tip-top condition, ready to go.
I'm Macy Peterson. I'm here because I won Top Gun for ball kids.
I'm Charlie Meadows, and I'm here today because I won the Top Gun for the boys.
We found out yesterday during our, like, ball kid party, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, so the party is lots of videos, a lot of fun. Everyone you know is there, so, yeah, it's a good way to get together as a group.
So what have you learnt, you know, in your fourth and final year as ball kids? What do you know now you've got a few years under your belt?
Everything, like all the basics of tennis, you know, everything a ball kid needs to know, really. You're very experienced with, like, the techniques and stuff like that.
As a ball kid, you probably learn, like, lots of, like, skills that come out, like, out on the outside world, so lots of integrity, dedication, everything that you, like, need to know in here and out there, so lots of life skills.
And is there a prize for being the top ball kids?
As Top Guns this year, we get to do both the men's and women's final, so we'll both be on tonight.
So what's different about doing the men's and women's finals? Like, obviously they're massive matches, a lot of people around the world watches them. What's the protocol as a ball kid for a big match like that?
So usually it's just the same as if you're on an outside court, but obviously the court's a lot longer, a bit more expectation, crowd's bigger, everyone's watching. But yeah, just you've got to try and enjoy it as well, as much as stress about what's going on.
What's been your favourite moment through this journey? Because you get to be up close and personal with a lot of very, very famous players and people on the court.
This AO, like, favourite match I've done this time was probably the Arena Showdown with Novak and Nick Kyrgios. That was a lot of fun, very funny to watch, and, like, ball kid as well. Overall, I don't know if I could just pick one moment. I got to speak to Ash Barty one time, which was pretty cool because she just, like, walked past.
As much as ball kids is about meeting the players, just the connections you make with other ball kids. So it's like kind of another family that you go to. So, yeah, making those connections and meeting new people.
I was thinking about it the other day. When I'm, like, down there ball kidding, it's just like an outside court, like Charlie said before. But when you're up in the stands, it's, like, so different to when, like, where we are, which is pretty cool.
Do you get nervous?
At the start, yes. But, like, once I ease, like, you ease into it and it's fine. It's just fun, really.
And I feel like as much of it's nerves, it's also excitement. So, yeah, just being really excited, especially these big games, make sure that excitement comes as well. It's good.
And finally, if you had any advice for any budding ball kids that are younger than you two, what would it be?
Don't stress. Don't stress out too much. Like, yes, you've got the supervisors watching you, but really when you're, like, relaxed and everything, it's fine. And talk to people, hang out with new people. Don't stay in just one little group. Like, expand, socialise with everyone. It'll be fun.
Mine's probably just enjoy yourself, because 4 years goes really quickly when you have, like, when you're doing something you love. So, yeah, just enjoy yourself while it's there.
As Novak Djokovic and Stefanos Tsitsipas prepared to walk out onto the big stage for the final, another duo was backstage at Kia Arena, preparing to put on a different kind of show. Josh Martin found his way into the green room of electronic duo Flight Facilities before their appearance on the finals festival stage.
Hi, I'm Jimmy.
And I'm Hugo.
And we are from a band called Flight Facilities.
The guy we used to work in a studio next door to would refer to us as White Soul, so I thought that was good.
I'll take that. That's an honorary slap in the face.
Yeah. No one's ever given a better description. I think I'll take it.
Yeah.
You guys actually dress up sometimes as aviators on stage. Where does this aviation theme begin?
That was my grandfather back in the 70s or 80s. He had a company called Flight Facilities, which was in New South Wales, and it used to operate between Marimbula and Sydney. And so they'd just kind of do charter flights. And his company was called Flight Facilities, and it had the same logo. So it just took everything.
Did you ever want to be a pilot yourself?
I did desperately at the age of 5. And then like after a few bad flights in, he used to have this small Cessna 310 and it was affectionately known as the Vomit Comet. So after a few of those, being a pilot wasn't that appealing after that.
Hey, how do you think that Laurie would feel about us doing this with the logo and the name now?
Yeah, he probably would have killed me. But like... If I could have had 5 years grace, I reckon then he would have been like, oh, that's okay. But like watching the building stage was painful enough for our parents. Yeah, I don't know how he would have reacted.
Yeah,
we know you can perform on international stages, but if you guys get on the tennis court, how do you go?
I'm not terrible at tennis. I played at school, so I consider myself half decent. But like then you watch this and you go, I'm garbage. So
I won most improved one time when I was really young, and I'm convinced it's just because I stopped being a little turd in the training camp at like summer training camp. So, but I was pretty chuffed with that. So I actually really got into tennis for a little while. But I'm shithouse now.
Oh, actually, I had most wins in the under 16s. There we go.
Impressive.
I was about to ask.
They gave me a little medal for it and everything. It was nice. So yeah, that's where my career started and finished, I think. So
what's your weapon on the court? Is your serve, your forehand, your backhand?
It used to be volleys for me, and then I was short at school, and then I got really tall, so I didn't realize I could serve until like 5 years after puberty, which
which was last year.
Yeah, which was somewhere in my early 30s, yeah.
I really liked a good forehand straight down the line, and I loved a good serve. I really tried to perfect my serve. Usually it was the second one that went in.
If you guys had to be a doubles team and you couldn't be called Flight Facilities, What would you want your nickname to be?
That is a good question. What are the best answers you've heard so far?
Well, I mean, we're still working on Jason Kubler and Rinky Hijikata's nickname, although I hear they want to be called Ice Cube and Ice Rink. So they're like the Ice Brothers. So I don't know if there's like some last name combinations you could go after.
We got some awkward last names to come.
Yeah, we got Lyle and Gruzman, which is pretty...
It just wound up being Gruel.
Gruel. It's close to a really big artist. Or what's the other way to work that out? Luzman. Yeah. That is actually great. Yeah, the Luzman.
Yeah. The Luzmans will be... I think we'll stay true to our name.
And so the curtains are drawn on AO23 with new champions and enduring legends. I hope you've enjoyed our coverage of the Australian Open, all made possible by the efforts of the AO Show team. Editor Ed Denton, producer Josh Martin, Vox Pop producer Ari Pavia, gig analyst Simon Ray, and bonus episode producer Sam Kozlovsky. Plus, all of our contributors from ozopen.com, AO Radio, and Tennis Australia's host broadcast, who've lent their voices to every episode. And I'm John Huvenaz, thanking you for joining me and the team over the past month. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to receive notifications of new episodes down the track. And if you've enjoyed our coverage of the Australian Summer of Tennis, please consider leaving a rating and a comment so more fans can enjoy the AO Show.